G'day, you mob. Welcome to this episode of Aussie English, number one place for everyone and anyone wanting to get to Mars. Just kidding. So today's episode, guys, I dragged my wife into the studio to sit down with me, have a bit of a natter, have a chin wag, have a chat about the TV series Mars. This is a wonderful documentary series. It's kind of like docudrama, docuseries on Netflix, all about what the process of going to Mars, inhabiting Mars, colonizing Mars, everything like that, what it's going to be like, you know, the different hurdles we have to get over in order to leave the Earth, in order to get to Mars, and then the challenges that we're going to face once we're there. So, we snuck off to my parents' place. We left my son there. We snuck back here for an hour. We sat down and we had a big chat about Mars, the TV show. So, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. It was a really good experience. We're going to try and do more of these where we sit down on Netflix, watch a series, and then review it, and hopefully give you some great English content in order to level up your English. So, without any further ado, guys, slap the bird. Let's begin. Alrighty. Kelly, what's going on? Are you on this planet? Are you on this planet, Kel?
No.
You're out of this world.
I'm on Mars.
Oh, Jesus. How have you been? What's the goss? What's been going on recently before we get into the meat of this episode?
Not much. Just
been surviving?
Yeah, just, you know.
Battling with motherhood and almost a year up. He's about to be
next week.
A year old next week.
Yes, on the 9th. Exciting. Yes.
Time flies.
Crazy. I can't believe he's 21. It's just
21.
What? Turning one.
I'm trolling you. I know. It's pretty crazy. He's going to be a year old. Far out.
I know. Jesus.
Time flies. Anyway, so you've been good.
Yeah. Doing, you know, my thing, working from home, with you, studying from home as well, taking care of Noah.
You're definitely
helpful. Yeah.
You got more on your plate than I do.
I perhaps have more on my plate.
You have quite a lot. But so we've been, whilst at home, obviously, each night, normally watching something on Netflix,
yes.
Right? Or TV shows to try and sort of...
Quality time.
Yeah, that's it. What is it? Tempo qualidade. So, we normally have a glass of wine and have a TV show. The most annoying thing with Kel, though, is...
What?
You're pretty difficult to find good TV shows, right? You're very judgmental.
Yes, I don't watch whatever. I just, yeah. I do watch things that, and you know, I don't like when they finish. I'm like, oh, that wasn't quite good. But then for me to give it a shot, like to, you know, I'm going to watch this, it has to be quite convincing. I don't know why.
What makes a good TV show for you, though? What gets you
to sit down and watch
it?
I'm really lazy to get into something that, it's one thing is if it's going to take ages to finish, yep. Like Grey's Anatomy. I tried to watch it and then I just couldn't keep going. It's just way too much effort. I don't have the time to watch it.
But what is that?
And
because
then,
you come on it and you think, oh my God, there's so many seasons and I want to finish all of it? Because that sounds like you're looking at the whole as opposed to just, oh, this looks interesting and I'll start and see how it goes.
No, I don't like being stuck in a... just watching this thing forever.
Yeah.
Like, I want to finish it. I just want to finish it and watch something else. And the other thing is...
In order to finish that, and then watch something else.
I don't like watching... I'm not a big fan of movies. I do watch some movies with you, but it's more... I'm more into documentaries. Even TV series are a bit like... I don't know. I like old stuff, like I don't know, Seinfeld or The Office. And I think the newest, you made me watch a Game of Thrones, like the last bit, and that was it.
Probably the last two or three seasons, I think you watched with me.
But that's it. Like I'm not a serious person.
You're not a binge watcher.
No,
I'm
not.
A binge watcher of series.
I prefer to watch, you know, one thing at a time.
That's
and just like
frustrating.
I know, because you love binge watching.
Yes.
And I hate it.
Well, you go to bed early too. I mean, I've only just in the last few days tried to switch to match our our rhythms so that we go to bed at the same time, and I get up early because Noah makes so much noise in the morning anyway. So true. I wake up. But yeah, well, it was always frustrating because in the evening we have our Temple Club Daj, our quality time in Portuguese, obviously. And then you go to bed after one episode, and I'll be like on the edge of my seat, like, I want to see what's going to happen next. What's going to happen next?
I mean, to be fair, sometimes I do watch a second episode. You get sucked in. Like, oh, sometimes yeah, let's you get finish it. In. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I prefer, you know, let me do it tomorrow. And I get really involved with anything I watch. Like, you know, if I like the characters, for example, I'll be like, oh, yes, I hope they, you know, they succeed and things, nice things happen. So I don't want to be frustrated or like just, I want it to last a little bit longer. So I'm like, I can finish tomorrow.
But you also have a pretty bad habit, don't you, Kel?
Which one?
Of, wanting to know what's going to happen before it happens.
Oh, yes.
You want to tell the listeners all the spoilers about how annoying that is for me.
It's not annoying.
Yes, it is.
Because
it's not
I don't tell you. I don't tell you. I just
want to
know.
You ask me. You say, can you pause it so I can look up if he dies or not? And I'd be like, can't we just watch? You know, we're watching Narcos about drug lords in Central and South America. And Kel's like, oh, my God. I don't know if Pacho from, you know, Narcos in Mexico is going to die or not. I need to find out before we, you know, see what happens next. And I'm like, just wait. Just let it happen.
Prepare myself.
So you can't handle suspense. Jesus.
No. And if I really like the character, and it doesn't happen every time. It's like it has to be like a true story. Like Narcos is based on true events, right?
Yeah.
Like it's all about, you know, famous,
infamous
people. And so I just, it's history. So, you know, I just want to know what happened. I'll watch it anyway. But usually I don't mind spoilers. So
yeah, but the problem is when you know and I don't know. Because I can see your reactions, whether or not you say anything explicitly, I can sort of gauge, you know, you're not uncomfortable at the moment of mass intense suspense. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess he's not going to die. So
it's one thing I know I do that is quite annoying. I don't know if you find it annoying or not. I like to discuss, for example, if we are watching a documentary about a certain crime and, you know, I like to discuss what's happening. Like, oh, what do you think would happen if, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, tell me, like, what's your opinion? And you just want to finish and then talk about it.
Well, so, it's hard for me to watch it whilst talking, especially if it's in Portuguese or another language and there's subtitles that I have to read and we're speaking to each other in Portuguese. It starts to, you know, it's too much multitasking.
I know.
Anyway, so we watched Mars recently.
Yeah.
How do we find this one? We were just searching through Netflix.
We actually found it because you found it.
Of course.
But the thing was, you said, oh, it's with Pacho.
Yeah, it was with
the same actor, Pacho.
Alberto
Amant, something like that. Yeah. He's an Argentinian actor.
Yeah,
when you were like, oh, you're going to like it? And I was like, yes.
Well, it's so hard because I find things I want to watch. And if you don't like them, I don't get to watch them until you go to bed. But if I find one you do like,
you
I'm like,
to.
Oh, yes. And then I get sort of disappointed when you're like, and I'm going to go to bed after the first episode.
But every night you have something to watch, so it's
exactly.
Nice. And you don't have to worry about, oh, my God, like in 2 days I have to find something new to watch with you because I'm so difficult to please in that regard. And, so we watch Mars.
So, yeah, we should go through some of it. Why did you find it so compelling? Why did it? Because it was obviously more than just Pacho, the actor of Pacho being in it, that kept you watching it. Why do you think you're so interested in the idea of humans traveling from Earth to Mars and colonizing and potentially terraforming the planet, the red planet?
Well, I didn't know what the it's half a documentary, half like a fiction. So
you want to explain?
Yeah.
It's a docuseries.
Oh, yeah. Is that what they call it?
I believe that's what Netflix at least calls it. Docuseries.
So I didn't know, you know, what it was when we started watching it. So, I don't know. I've always been interested in astronomy. I was going to say astrology.
But before we switch on to that, the docuseries idea here, I guess, is that they interview a bunch of famous people, scientists, people like Elon Musk, for example, that everyone will know, people from NASA, people from, you know, whatever the episode is about. They interview experts in that field, but then they also dramatize it or dramatize it, whatever the word is, and make it an actual, like, there's people there living it out, like a kind of series/movie style thing at the same time.
It's like a documentary with a I don't know.
Acted out scenes.
Yeah.
Which made it more interesting to watch, but it's kind of abrupt. They switch between, you know, these things happening on Mars with actors, and then bam, you're, you know, interviewing Elon Musk, and you're kind of like, yeah, I just want to watch one and then the other.
Yeah, it took me probably a few episodes to get, you know, like, oh, now I understand what's happening. It's not that the way they did it, it's confusing. It's just because it's a different way of, you know,
presenting the information.
Yeah. But it's really nice. I kind of like it. And answering your question, I've always been interested in, you know, space and just knowing more about, you know, physics and those kind of things. But I didn't know what to expect from the series.
Yeah.
And after the first, you know, the first few episodes, I really liked it. Because it's so like, it's real life and they're discussing like, real issues and reality and the future. And there's also like the characters that you kind of, oh, I hope they succeed.
Emotionally
in doing this.
connect with.
Yes, yes.
I really liked it. And I guess each of the episodes is kind of set up where they cover different aspects of what going to Mars would entail and life on Mars, you know, things that they would have to overcome. So, I think we can go through each of them. I think the first episode they were talking about the issue with rockets and the sheer expense of getting to Mars. Mm-hmm. They talked about the race to the moon and how I think the government at the time in the US had planned to get people on Mars within the next decade or two.
But
the space race, because of governmental things and people who got in power, just decided, yeah, we're not spending money on this anymore. It's done.
Mm.
But it was interesting in the first episode, right, because they were showing Elon Musk and SpaceX, one of his companies that has spent probably billions of dollars trying to design reusable rockets.
Amazing.
And what was the point of using reusable
rockets, right? Cut down the costs. Yeah. You can obviously use them again, and that would be it, especially going to Mars, because I didn't know that, and I learned watching the series. It's a seven month journey. It's quite expensive, and you can't just go and, you know, bounce back. It's like
it's a lot of money involved. If not billions of dollars to do that.
Exactly.
And so they want to get their money's worth, right? If they're going to send you there, you need to work and you know.
So his idea is like, if you're going to do this, if you're going to do Mars, we have to find a way to reuse rockets. And they did it. So, I mean, they haven't sent anyone to Mars.
Well, they showed it. And it was funny because you didn't know at the time. Elon had been successful a few years ago and had re-landed one of the rockets. So, they were doing all these tests of, I think they were on sort of platforms out in the ocean, which is hard enough because it's kind of moving up and down.
I know. It was quite moving.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, so beautiful.
And a few times the rockets took off, blew up, you know, came back down and didn't land properly. But then finally, I don't know if it was 2016 or 2017.
I think so.
They finally landed one. Coming down. So, I think, I don't know if they perfected it, but they can at least do it.
Amazing. It's just mind-blowing what humans are capable of.
Well, and it comes in the wake of, I think it was yesterday, that they sent two astronauts. SpaceX sent two astronauts from America. The first launch in decade or so, isn't it? A heap of years.
A decade, yeah.
Since they've launched a rocket with space, with astronauts on them into space. But it was interesting. And I guess in the first episode, they were talking about just the expense. So, what was it? They showed I think it was in this series, they showed sending a pizza to the space station. I think it was, who was it again? Maybe it was one of the food industry ones, but that we were watching. But I think it was, what are they called again? Pizza Hut in America sent a pizza to the space station.
Really?
And it cost them $1 million.
It's ridiculous.
To send a pizza.
Really?
Yeah, because of the weight. That's how much it costs to get it up there.
That's crazy.
The space and weight is a premium, right?
That's crazy. I can't imagine like the whole. It's just so much money.
Yeah.
And just so many people involved. Like we watched Mars, and they show the engineers and everyone. It's just like you forget like how many people are involved into those
behind
things.
A single rocket behind or a single astronaut and how much training they've done
and
too,
the
right?
thing just you know it's it disintegrates and you're just like there was people's lives and work and it's
months
just,
of work probably absolutely. You know a combined thing of hundreds maybe even thousands of years of combined work from thousands of human beings
crazy
put into that. So, the second episode, I think, was on physiology and psychology. Do you remember some of the issues with a human being's body physiologically or physically and their mind psychologically that they were discussing in that episode.
So one thing is that you're not using your muscles. Like for, let's say, 9 months, seven, 9 months that you're traveling to get to Mars, you're not actually using your muscles. So
zero gravity. Well, you are just nowhere near with that resistance, right?
So that would be a really big thing for humans. And once you're there, it's the isolation and just being completely isolated and just not, you know, it's not as if you could, I'll go back tomorrow. Or I don't like the job, I'll go back. It's just really hard for some people, even very professional and experienced astronauts.
Yeah.
They struggle because they have this, you know, places that you can actually act as if you were in.
Well, they did. I think America did an experiment
a
few years ago, maybe a decade or so ago. And Russia did one that was even longer where they effectively isolate people in a mock space station or Mars colony, right?
Yeah.
For I think the Americans did it for like 250 days and the Russians did it for like 500 days.
Jesus.
With like only six or seven people inside these little houses effectively where they pretend to do all the work and they go to sleep and they're not allowed to come out and the messages they get from family are all delayed by, you
absolutely
know, days or weeks and they see how they what happens to them psychologically, right?
It's crazy. Like,
And well, before you get into it, the Russian one was crazy because I think they had six people in there.
Mm-hmm.
And of the six, four of them came out psychologically unsound, broken, right? Like they were mentally
That's what I was saying. They were experienced, you know. At least they were already working in the field and they, I assume, knew what they were doing, but they were severely affected. And I imagine we forget, like when you talk about exploration of space and going to Mars and all those things, like if you do get to this point where people are living on Mars, like that's not just getting, you know, get on a plane and go. It involves a lot more than that. And isolation for, you know, scientists and astronauts would be a big thing.
Well, it was interesting because it was kind of a juxtaposition between isolation and the lack of isolation because you can't get away from the people you're with. So it's kind of
you can't go for a walk and like just
cool off.
Yeah.
Relax. So if you have a fight with someone, you have to be able to resolve that because there's no way you can go, right? Like if it's like our relationship, right? If we have fights, I can't just be like, well, I'm never going to talk to her again.
The difference is we live in a, you know, rather big house.
I can still leave the house.
Exactly. Yeah. But in a rocket. On a rocket.
Yeah, and then once you're on the in the colony,
it's just
on Mars.
You're just there with those people. So who knows?
And so they were showing that in the drama, right, with these tensions and relationships between the people and how they had to resolve their issues and everything, and likening it to some of the extreme exploration in places like Antarctica. And the Arctic, where you were there together for years potentially, especially if something went wrong. But the interesting thing too is that what happens to your body when you get to Mars? Right? You're under different conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It must seem so weird too when you look out the window and it looks just like the desert, but you can't go outside and breathe the air because it's mostly carbon dioxide.
And there's no one. And there's no one else. The whole planet. I think for me that would be really hard to wrap, just to understand, to get used to.
Yeah.
And it's just us here and I have to get along with those people. And I don't know.
And they showed someone mentally break, right?
Where they had
was
a crazy guy.
and he ends up, you know, opening the door, hallucinating, opening the door and destroying one of the labs and killing a bunch of people.
Yeah, he just couldn't handle a bunch of... Some stuff went wrong and he was already struggling with the journey and everything. So he just...
But I guess it goes to show how much it's going to be so important to vet the people that end up going because, you know, obviously you want them to succeed, but also the amount of money invested in sending those people there to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose those people, whether it's at the start or, you know, through the thing, you've lost millions, maybe billions of dollars that you've invested into that. And it's not an easy thing. Oh, we'll just send someone else. It's, you know, a year until you get that sorted out potentially.
I know. But it's one thing you can never be sure, right? Like it's...
Yeah. You don't know until you jump in.
Exactly.
So, I think the next one was talking about, the next episode was like finding shelter.
Oh, yeah, when they were trying to find water, was it? Like ice or something like that?
Yeah, well, they needed somewhere to get away from the surface because there's, I think, and again, I'm not an astrophysicist, but there's radiation from the sun because the atmosphere isn't very thick, so they don't have the same kind of protection that they had on Earth. And I think that they'd set the TV show up, or the docuseries, where in one of the first episodes, they show the difficulty of what happens if you land the rocket. When you land on Mars, you land away from where you'd sent your other materials and machines in order to set the base up. So, they were sending all that out first, organizing it with robots. Then they send the people out, but they were 70 kilometers away because they missed it. And so, they had to try and get all the way from the rocket to this location by effectively walking and using a
I don't know. It's just crazy because you imagine how many things can go wrong. It's just such a risky situation. And in the series, they were like miles away from where they were supposed to land. And they had to drive and then walk, and a bunch of things happened, and they ended up losing
oxygen.
Crazy. And that's very possible. I mean,
You got to be correct and get everything right every single time, right, in those sorts of conditions to survive. And if you don't, you pay the consequences. You die.
And the risks are really high.
But so, they get to the base, they establish it, they get power from, like, the solar panels they're using. But then they have a certain amount of time where they have to find a crater or some kind of, I think they're talking about volcanic tubes, lava tubes. Where it's underground, it's a naturally forming cave or cavern where they can put the main base, you know, in this vast thing to be protected from the outside. And so, for the first month or two, I think they're spending all this time using drones and stuff to try and find this.
And they finally do. They find it. And then things start to progress, I think. Like, when they can finally set up and, you know, a place to stay and be away from the dangers, like radiation and all this stuff.
I think then after that, they talk about issues with power and weather. They have a dust storm, that effectively covers all of the solar panels, so they don't have very much power.
Yeah.
And apparently on Mars, even though they have a very thin atmosphere there, there is actually a lot of weather that happens, and it sort of forms into things like large, vast dust storms,
which can
cover the entire planet.
Exactly. It's a global thing. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And it can be seen from space. Yeah. It's crazy. And the planet's all like red and dust and just ridiculous.
And I guess that's where the guy flips out, the botanist, because he has come along and he has all these plants in this lab that they're trying to grow, because another issue they have is food and becoming self-sustaining, so that they don't have to rely on resources being sent from Earth all the way to Mars and arriving every 7 months or whatever it is. One, because it's expensive, but two, you know, what happens if one of those rockets explodes or doesn't make it?
Yeah.
And so, they're battling with trying to, you know, get enough power, use the power wisely, become sustainable by using these crops and growing them effectively.
And the guy is just really...
And managing personal relationships.
It's funny. That's one of the characters I really disliked. He was really, just really rude and just a bit crazy from the beginning. And he just lost it. And they lost everything, actually, all the plants and things they were trying to.
It reminded me so much of colonization of countries, right? You know, colonies like Britain, Spain, at least colonies that were set up by Britain, Spain, Portugal, and Holland back in the day. I've obviously been reading a lot about that in Australian history at the moment. And it was the same sort of thing where you had the colony was set up in Australia in the late 1780s. They'd come over in a certain number of ships with all these people, but they were cut off from England effectively by months and months of travel at sea. And so, they had to try and become self-sustaining by growing their own crops.
Yeah.
They had to deal with unknown weather, unknown land. You know, they had indigenous people who were not necessarily happy with them being in that place.
Yeah, welcoming.
Yeah, that's it, lighting their crops on fire. And so, it's interesting how those things are paralleled. Like, it makes me appreciate how much that at the time when places like Australia was being colonized, the colonists and the convicts and the soldiers must have viewed themselves like we view going to Mars, where once you're there, there's no way of getting home. You know, it's effectively impossible.
It is amazing to imagine how adventurous those people were as well. Like, we'll go to this place that no one has been to before, and you have to thrive.
Haven't lived there.
Yeah,
it's nothing set up. You got to do all the work.
Yes, and you just, you know, lead the way and... yeah, it's crazy. I can't imagine just, you know, packing my things up and going just to explore something new like that.
Well, and that was a big thing with the kinds of people they have to send to somewhere like Mars.
Mm.
It's kind of like you have to find these human beings who are pretty much happy giving up potentially the chance to have children to continue to see their family,
absolutely,
you know, on a regular basis. I can't imagine being in a location where I can't see the beach or see a forest or smell the ocean or the forest or see animals, pat dogs. Yeah, exactly. Or even just breathe the air, right? Like it's quite a sacrifice.
It is. And it's interesting. Like, I remember, I think with the first episode, the guy asks, if that's not the most important thing in your life that you're doing right now,
leave.
I ask you to leave.
Yeah.
And it has to be, because you have, I mean,
when I think he says no one will ever judge you.
Yeah, like, because, you know, if you say I have kids, I don't want to do this anymore, it's fine because your kids are your world. But, you know, yeah, I can't imagine. That's one job I would never have. Although going to space amazes me. It's just beautiful. And if I was a millionaire,
I think too, you need to sort of train from a young age, right? With that in mind, it's hard if that was suddenly to be dumped on your lap and they can say, you know, Kel, do you want to go to Mars right now? You'd be like, no. But if you were, you know, I don't know, a teenager growing up like one of the actors was, and he'd like prepared for this his entire life, it's kind of like,
so you set up your life to, you know, so you don't make huge commitments.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to go, and maybe you don't leave kids behind or, you know, a partner.
So the next thing was science versus industry, right?
Mm.
We had these two different sort of corporations or groups. One was kind of like the NASA equivalent, where you had scientists going out to Mars, setting up a colony, doing a lot of research and study. And the whole point was to sort of, it was for humanity. It was paid for by governments.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the sort of counter to that?
The
Lucrum,
yeah. They were a private company. They were trying to drill and find water, I believe.
Water and liquid resources.
Yeah, resources. So, they're all about money and they just wanted to basically exploit the planet, and they're very different views. Like, on one hand you have scientists, and you imagine they're trying to understand how everything works and come up with data for us to, you know, be able to know more about the planet and perhaps, you know, set up a new home for us. And on the other side, you have a company who is interested in getting money, making money from this. And that's when I think that the series got really interesting for me, because it's pretty much Earth. Like, that's all we're doing here. Like,
why would things change? You've got humans going there, and a big part of it will be that if you can work out a way of making a lot of money out of Mars, then you're going to have the capital, the money to send people there, right? And so that was the difficulty too. These two corporations, the science one and the sort of capitalist mining one, had to kind of join to stay together as well and help each other out, because as well, their groups once on Mars lived near each other and relied upon one another in order to get by. Well, more so Lucrum on the scientists needing their power and their water and everything to get
but
by.
Those people were there for years in the
setting
series. So it's kind of like we see them happy because there are more people coming, and they'll finally, you know, get to know other people. So it's interesting, like, although they were rivals at some stage, but they also formed friendships and relationships, and it's interesting.
And then there was a lot of issues with finding water and looking for life. So there was a certain scientist or a group of scientists very, very passionate and interested in finding life, because they were interested in a second genesis, right?
Yeah.
Which would entail what? You can throw this question back to me if you want, but I obviously don't want to talk the whole
scientist
time.
Here.
Well, it's effectively a second genesis would be the evolution of life, the creation of life somewhere else that had nothing to do with Earth.
Yeah.
And so the scientists were very interested in trying to find organisms, whether they were microbial or not, and have a look at, are these related to life forms on Earth?
Mm-hmm.
So, they've come from Earth, however that may have been, or vice versa. They've come from Mars and Earth was a better habitat and they could, you know, go crazy. Or they evolved separately on Mars and, you know, all the things we could learn from that.
Yeah.
And so, they show the sort of conflict between the miners and the scientists because they don't want certain places destroyed.
Yeah.
If there's water, they don't want it contaminated. And they sort of mm-hmm. show the, they, you know, make it very dramatic. But they show those kinds of conflicts as they're going to arrive, right?
Yeah. And they show those same issues happening on Earth.
Yeah.
Like when you have,
contrast it.
Yeah. When you have places like, the Antarctica, or, you know.
I think they had the Arctic oil and the Norwegians,
true,
right?
True, yeah, where you have a company that is getting oil from this area and you have people from, like, I don't know, Greenpeace or, you know, other scientists just trying to preserve and to make sure there's not, this environment's not destroyed. Very different views. It's, yeah. And I think it says a lot about the current moment we are living now, because we don't really listen to science. Like,
and well, I feel like climate change, example,
yeah,
right?
You feel like it's been, warnings are there for, like, have been out there for, like, ages, and only now I feel like we are actually taking it seriously. I don't know, I just feel like it's,
even now we're not.
Maybe I think
the public is starting to become way ahead of governments in terms of you know, the action that's taken. But yeah, it is sort of annoying that a lot of the governments are waiting for the 11th hour to act, like the last minute, and then it's like,
maybe because the companies, like the company from the series, they have so much power and money that it's hard not to have them influencing the decisions the governments and, you know, leaders do make.
Yeah. I know. So it'll be interesting. I mean, hopefully, I would love to live long enough to see people get to Mars.
Really?
Yeah, I would love to see what's going to happen, just for out of curiosity.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if it goes well or not. Feelings. But then there was another aspect of it where they were sort of showing, is this going to bring us together? Is this going to mean that, because countries are going to have to rely on one another, you know, you're going to have people from all over the world, countries like China, Russia, America, wherever in Europe, all working together. And so it could go either way, where you could have people, you know, all coming together and saying, you know what, now that we're outside of Earth, we're just one team.
That's what scares me.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen the same idea working well.
Well, it happens in places like Antarctica, I believe, where they have you have a lot of foreigners in the same place, all with a similar goal, and they tend to be
maybe with the scientific community.
Yeah,
maybe, I don't know. But when, let's say, Mars do happen, we wouldn't have it wouldn't be only scientists.
Yeah,
we have, like, companies involved, and, you know, society as a whole. So I think that's when things get a bit tricky, and I don't know if I want to live enough to see that.
Really?
I don't know. She's really sad. For me, the whole going to Mars thing is really, really sad.
Yeah.
Because I think we've destroyed the planet we already have. You take it for granted in many, many ways. All of us, like. And I think it shows that humanity is so powerful. Like, humans are so powerful. They can go to the moon, they can go to Mars, only to destroy it again. I don't feel, it's a really bleak and horrible way to see the future, but maybe I just see it as a, like, here we go, let's destroy another planet. I don't know.
But there's nothing there, right?
Well,
as far as we know.
Oh, well, there'll be enough for them to, you know, I don't know. I just feel it's quite sad that we don't care enough. There are problems we already have here, really, really big, the huge issues, and you should be focusing on them.
And that was a reoccurring theme throughout this TV series of just, like, we need to organize our own stuff. Clean your room, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Make
and
your
you
bed
don't have,
here first before leaving the house.
For better or worse, we don't have another planet to live on. Like,
well, we might.
Well, but we don't know. Like, imagine how long it's going to take for us to be able to live in on Mars.
I think
would be just not. And I think we don't take care of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a really simplistic way of. I know it's all important, and I would love to go to space, and, you know, but it's just not. It scares me. It's weird. It scares me that humans are so powerful.
Yeah. I don't know. Didn't bother me the same way, but I think it's one of those things where I don't think we'll ever terraform Mars. Like, I've watched a whole bunch of documentaries from physicists and scientists about space, going into space, you know, time travel, all that sort of crazy, the maths behind it, what you can and can't do, and when they crunch the numbers, the amount of time it's going to take to terraform somewhere like Mars, it just makes it a total waste of time and energy. Yeah, because I think the one of the clips I was watching was saying, in order to make the atmosphere on Mars breathable, you need to have, obviously, you know, 20-21% oxygen and the rest nitrogen and carbon dioxide, methane, whatever else, but largely nitrogen and oxygen. The only place that you can really get those from what I remember, were other moons around large planets like Jupiter and Saturn. And he was saying something like, you would have to send rockets from those planets or those moons with nitrogen and oxygen to Mars constantly for something like 1,000 years, sending hundreds of them a day in order to get enough gases on that planet for it to build up an atmosphere where you could then breathe the air.
Yeah.
And so, it makes a lot more sense to just try and create places to live in space that are, you know, like space stations, but to try and come up with a way that, say, it rotates to mimic gravity and you can just live inside of that instead, because it's a lot cheaper, it's much smaller, you could potentially move it around. You know, and so that would be a much more effective way of living in space than trying to terraform another planet. And then you can also, a big issue with Mars is that it's got a huge amount of gravity. So, if you want to mine resources, one, you have to send rockets and everything to Mars that then have to be able to come off of Mars with the cargo that it's picking up and its own weight, and bring that all the way back to Earth. So, you can imagine if it's $1 million to send a pizza to the space station, how much does it cost to send a pizza to Mars and then to bring back a pizza? You know, that would be billions of dollars. And then, what is a ton of iron ore? Or, you know, so, it's it makes much more sense from what I've read as well to just mine asteroids, because you've got the asteroid belt and amongst, you know, other asteroids in the system. You've got the asteroid belt just outside of Mars, I believe. So, just send rockets there and you can manipulate asteroids and grind them up and take all the ore from them, and they don't have anywhere near the same kind of gravity that you have to deal with in order to pick them up, pull them apart and get the rock back to wherever you want it to go.
It's all
So, there's a lot of those things that I find interesting. People are always like, we're going to go to Mars, we'll terraform the place, we'll live there, it'll be great. And it's like, we may not need to. Like, it depends what the goals are, right? We might do it as a, let's go and just discover things there as like a scientific base. The same as setting up people on the moon. But I doubt that we'll ever set up a second population of human beings on Mars, at least in
that
our...
That makes a lot of sense.
Who knows? Yeah. It could happen in thousands of thousands of years.
For scientific reasons, like, I think it's amazing that we could, you know, send people to Mars and just get the knowledge. Like, let's understand what is actually happening here and how things...
But not even that, right? Designing the technology to do that may have unforeseen...
Benefits
and advantages and benefits. Where you could, you know, like the X-ray that we use now to look at broken bones and inside the body was originally used to look into space. And so, we may come up with all these technologies to get to Mars that and can then be used to do something else.
And if it improves our life here on Earth, that would be amazing. And I think a lot of that technology can be... And actually, I didn't know that, but NASA does a lot of work, apparently, on... how can you fix some of the problems we already have here, like with climate change and other stuff. So, that's really interesting. And if the technology is there and it can help us, that would be amazing.
The only thing I really didn't like about this series as a biologist was them finding a contagion and everyone getting sick. That really shat me.
Why?
It's just, I find it very difficult to believe that you would go to a new planet and... I mean, to, you know, spoiler alert, but they effectively go to this planet, they find life. It looks like, you know, a nematode or something, like a worm. You know, they find this very, very tiny, microscopic, multicellular thing that kind of looks like long lines, like string or something, and it turns out to be alive. But they, you know, never get to the point of looking at the DNA or whatever. And then they find a second, you know, living organism that looks exactly the same. And everyone starts getting sick. And it turns out that I think the organism gets inside the body, starts replicating, obviously,
the conditions,
at a temperature. Because the temperature on the surface of Mars is very cold. Once it gets inside and it's at a hotter temperature, it starts replicating like crazy and causes these people to effectively die like they've got Ebola. mm-hmm. like just cough up blood and everything. And I just found that a bit of a stretch. I was
you have to remember that the average person doesn't have the understanding you have about. I don't have the same sort of look at it.
I don't criticize them. I just the idea was a bit whoa. You know, like it's not even a.
That was a big jump.
Like it's one thing with coronavirus. You get a virus that's come through a bat or another animal. At least that's an animal that virus has evolved in.
Mm.
Humans already have viruses, so you can understand. Okay, similar animal has a virus. We have viruses. That thing moves from one animal to another, and we have this new disease. Mm-hmm. But going to a new planet. Encountering whether it's life that evolved on Earth and then went there or vice versa, mm-hmm. but it's related to us ultimately, it's with DNA and RNA. That's one thing, but to make a whole bunch of people sick the first time they encounter it and kill a bunch of people, I just found that very hard to swallow.
What do you think are the chances that there is life
on Mars
or anywhere else on the
I'm not really educated in that area, but I wouldn't be surprised either way if people went there and said, yeah, there's nothing. We haven't found anything ever.
Mm.
Or if people went there and said, yeah, we found, you know, single cell organisms like bacteria or viruses that had separately evolved there or that are related to organisms on Earth where they're based on DNA and RNA, whether they, you know, came from Mars and came here. Because there's been work done showing that Mars and Earth have some of the same minerals and rocks that have from a long time ago, I believe, have, you know, asteroids have smashed into Earth and those rocks have been sent out into space and then they hit Mars.
Mm.
And they could potentially have bacteria or other small things living inside them that could survive in space.
Wow.
Yeah, well, they've shown that... what's the little organism with like 8 legs? They've shown that thing can live in space.
Really?
Yeah, I believe so. So it can survive radiation, and that's a multicellular organism. I believe that can survive radiation, very low levels of oxygen, that sort of thing. So bacteria, it's kind of like it could just go dormant, freeze, get to Mars, and then somehow, you know, we have all sorts of bacteria on Earth that are called I think they're called extremophiles.
Mm.
They can live in crazy environments. Like in boiling water around sulfur vents at the bottom of the earth, you know, and in environments where there's zero oxygen and they can use chemicals to effectively get energy from sulfur, from other chemicals. So it's possible that there's life on Mars in the absence of oxygen.
Yeah.
Or potentially in the water that is on Mars because we've seen photos now of Mars where it's obvious there was liquid water once on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Mars has ice caps.
It's crazy.
So, there is water on Mars, I believe. So, you know, you could find life there. But you're not going to go to Mars and find animals walking around.
Yeah.
Like the conditions, at least. At least animals in the way that we think of them, I would put that at 0% chance that you would go there and there's, you know, a six-legged dog running around.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. The series I think they do make us feel like it's a bit easier than it actually is. Although there's a bunch of scientists on the same series saying, well, that's not quite right. But when you watch not the documentary, but the series, the people acting as if they were scientists. It's kind of like, you know, just go there and there you find life and you find water and you.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had to set all those sorts of things up each episode in order to sort of talk about the problem. And so it did feel like, you know, now they found shelter. Now they've got electricity. Yeah. Now they found, you know, life.
That
now they found liquid water. So
because
but they had to do that.
They always had an episode like
based on a certain problem.
Yes, that's it.
Sorry to keep finishing your sentences.
No, it's all good.
You gotta remember, guys, Kel's doing this in a second language. Before this, she's like, don't ask me any complicated questions, and if I have trouble, help me out. You're doing fine. But yeah, anything else to add? I guess the last episode, what happened in that episode?
I think was the big not fight, but the end of the fight, sort of, between the company, let's say the bad company and the scientists.
But before that, I guess in that episode, what did the bad company do?
They used explosives.
To drill for water, right? They were trying to drill down and get through some really hard rock.
And there was so much pressure on the guys, like not on the scientists, but on the I don't know if they were engineers or...
Yeah, the engineers and everything. The miners working there from the corporate leaders of Lucrum, pushing them to get certain...
To get anything, to be like... Because they, you know, they were spending millions of dollars just sending them there, and they had to find something and justify the presence on Mars. So they were under a lot of pressure, and the guy was just like, you know what? Let's explore everything.
When it was sad because he sort of...
It's really sad.
He extends an olive branch to the scientist that he's kind of had a rivalry with, who's been trying to get liquid water and everything, and raging up at them whenever they've gone into areas that were meant to be cordoned off for her to, you know, look for life and stuff. And he holds out an olive branch, gets her to come, and the moment he gets liquid water, he gets her to take some.
Yeah.
But what happens?
Then the whole place is like, they have a Mars cake?
Mars quake.
Mars quake.
Yeah. Yes. So they caught, instead of an earthquake, right? Ooh, I was like, they had an earthquake on Mars.
No, that was really nice.
A Mars quake. Yeah. Mars so they, quake. And they likened that. What did they liken that to on Earth that's had a similar sort of thing? I don't know if you noticed that during the show. Fracking. So that's what they do with fracking. They effectively dig wells going down into rock that has gas, I think methane, natural gas in it. But in order to get the gas out, I think they have to force water down there or use explosives to kind of fracture the rock, hence the name fracking.
Okay.
And then when they extract it, it comes out, all the gases and everything come out with the water. But the problem is on Earth, in the United States, I think a lot of these fracking companies have had issues with contaminating water with gases. So there's videos of people lighting water
coming out of their taps. True.
You know, because of the methane and also triggering things like earthquakes.
Yeah.
And so that was that kind of juxtaposition or, you know, sort of parallel there, where Lucrum did the same thing on Mars, thinking, oh, the place is a dead planet. There's no, you know, it'll be fine. And I guess they show that you don't. They're taking all of these extreme jumps.
Yeah.
And sets off this earthquake and effectively wipes out the Lucrum base, right?
Yeah.
And this other scientific base almost gets wiped out, and they have to save everyone. But that, what happened to the leader?
Oh, unfortunately. He goes into the station trying to find survivors and, you know, trying to see what happened. And he's feeling really bad, and I felt so sorry for him because he's a horrible guy at the beginning. Like, he's really sexist and just, like, really rude. And but then they show another side of him. Like, he has a daughter, and he's under a lot of pressure. So, it's not actually his fault. Like, he's being pushed to do all those things and to, you know, show results. And he goes there trying to find people alive, and he gets pinned
behind some equipment
and
smashes his thing, and he can't breathe, and he dies, and they find him. But yeah, so it was interesting. I reckon I don't know, would you recommend that people watch it?
Absolutely, it's really nice.
Patrick's really hot.
Oh my god, he's just the best. Like, that he has a daughter in the series.
Well, yeah, we didn't mention that, did we? That they show the relationship side of things, and the girl, he's in love with a doctor, right? What's the sort of tension that builds there?
She's after, I think, 9 years, she gets fed up with the whole, like, everything's fake, like, there's no life for a human being, like, I want to go back to Earth.
Yeah.
And she sets up everything to go back, and then she finds out she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And they have to decide, if you stay, what's going to happen with the child? She's got to think,
do I keep the baby and I have to stay if I do that? Or do I have an abortion and I leave? Because they have absolutely no idea of what would happen in zero gravity. If you were not just on Mars having the baby, but in a rocket with no gravity, the baby would likely be born with big issues, because we don't realize how much things like our balance and, you know, the bones in our middle ear. There's probably a whole lot of aspects of our development inside the mother that gravity affects on Earth that sets us up for the rest of our life, you know, bone density, all that sort of stuff. And so, she's like, the baby's almost certain to die if I go into zero G gravity on the way back home to Earth.
So, she decides to stay and stay with him, and they have a baby girl. And initially the baby's not really doing well because, you know, they don't know if it's able to breathe or, you know, if they can get it out of the incubator.
Yeah.
It's just really sad. And after the quake, They have to because everything's damaged.
The incubator's damaged. Yeah.
When they get the baby out, and she's fine breathing.
She's breathing on her own.
Yeah.
But that was really another beautiful. That was another point biologically that really pissed me off in the series. Before we finish up, was that the doctor's like, if I have the baby on Mars, she can never return to Earth. And I was like, what? Like, I don't get it. What? Like, I. Because it was just so weird that she didn't explain it. She just said that.
Yeah,
and
she
then
just
didn't
said
explain
that.
It. And I'm like, what aspect of it are you talking about? Because are you talking about the fact that Mars has less gravity than Earth and that would somehow not allow the girl to form a bone structure that would ever be strong enough to go back to Earth? But then I'm like, you've been on Mars for a decade and a half or whatever it is by that time. So you're like, surely your bones would be the same as any adult that, you know, grew up on Mars. If the baby can survive in the first place, why would it not be able to get back to Earth? Obviously, it could have problems with bone density, like astronauts who spend a lot of time in space and they have to exercise and build that up.
But it wouldn't be impossible to come back.
I can't imagine it would be impossible. I would imagine there'd be a lot of hurdles. There'd be physiological side effects.
Psychological,
I don't,
perhaps.
I can't imagine being raised on Mars under that gravity. And then coming to Earth, I don't know what the difference. Let's have a look. I'm going to quickly search this. What's the difference?
Surface of Mars.
Gravity versus Earth. Let's see what it is. Is it like 0.7 or something? Oh, wow. It's only 40%, 38% of Earth's gravity.
But aren't they inside a protected environment? Like,
the gravity's from the planet. It's the inside their protected environment isn't going to change the force of gravity.
But, I mean, isn't she already experiencing what life on Earth, like...
Well, yeah, but she's, say, if it's 40%, if I were to go to Mars at the moment, say I'm 100 kilos and I go to Mars, I would weigh 40 kilos.
Okay.
So, weight is tied to gravity.
So,
mass doesn't change, the amount of space that I take up, but my weight would change. Same if I went to the moon, it's like about a sixth of what my weight is here. So, I would be something like 15 kilos on the moon.
Jesus.
That's why they can jump so high and everything, It's a lot slower in terms of being able to move around. So, if I go to Mars for a long time, my bones don't have to be anywhere near as strong because they're holding up 40% of my body weight.
So, that's the issue.
Yeah.
So, and she wouldn't be able to come to Earth.
Well, you would imagine it'd be all right. I can't imagine that you wouldn't be able to do certain things on the journey out here to prepare yourself.
True.
And then see what happens. But, you know, obviously, there's going to be difficulties, but... Yeah, but imagine how screwed up that would be getting out of a pod that's just landed on Earth and gravity is 2.5 times as strong. So, like, you just, you know, it'd be like if I suddenly weighed, 220 kilos.
Yeah.
It'd just be like, oh, geez, someone turned the gravity up. Like, it would be insane to get used to that. But on Earth, we have people who weigh, you know, 500 kilos.
For me, I kept thinking while I was watching it and seeing the babe and everything, well, if she comes to Earth, imagine all the things she'll be able to see and just get. I would get angry. Like, why was I born on Mars? Like, you know, like, this Earth here, it's so beautiful and... I don't know. It's really...
Well, imagine that too, being raised somewhere where you don't have animals.
You don't have all the
birds.
Children.
You can't breathe the air outside.
And animals. And
And then to come back to it'd be like me going back to England, right? But on a much greater scale. I've never been to England, but genetically, my ancestry is English, Scottish.
Yeah.
You know, so it would be very... If it's like you would be taught about this place. You're speaking a language that has many references to Earth, obviously. You would, you know, imagine all these expressions that we would use, like two birds, one stone. What's a bird?
I know.
You know, like these things that would be built in and then you would get back to Earth and suddenly see these. You would just, it'd be like being blind your entire life and then suddenly having that lifted, but times 100. You know, imagine seeing a wave. Imagine seeing a forest, like a tree. Imagine smelling a forest after the rain.
I know.
Imagine getting sick. You probably won't get sick, you know, out there, maybe, unless you got a cold or something. Imagine, you know, all these experiences.
That we just assume we should
take for granted.
It's part of life. And
imagine that.
So, yes, please watch it. It's really good. And if you like science and fiction and
Sci-fi, science fiction. It's great. I loved it. I thought it was good. It's definitely worth watching in order to think about these things. You know, should we do it? Should we not do it?
Mm-hmm.
And Kel and I kept having these conversations after each episode of like, what did you think of this? You know, how is this possible? What mm-hmm. about this? And so
mainly me asking, how is this possible? And you're trying to explain.
Well, even I had to look up a lot of this stuff. I'm like, would we do that? Is that possible? And so it was interesting just to get the gears moving inside my head and to have conversations with you. So yeah, watch it in English. Watch it with someone else who speaks English and then talk to them about it in English.
Talk about it. Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us.
See ya.
We'll see you next time. Peace. And thanks, Kelly. Thanks, Kel.